Social values, moral issues, government, economy, education, work, responsibility. What we think about these depends on our worldview. Now, VCY America presents Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House.
All right, welcome. Glad you are with us. And we are joined today by Patrick Wood. We've got a lot of, frankly, disturbing news. There was a lot of it this morning as I was preparing for today's broadcast. There's a lot of disturbing news and more than normal as far as a normal morning goes. I just kept hitting articles that are like, oh boy, that's a problem. Uh-oh, that's a problem. And one of them is certainly in our wheelhouse of things I've been warning about since my second book in 95, and that is the economic collapse. Now, of course, you guys know that we started talking about the fact that I believe they will do an economic collapse on purpose should the American people be waking up and resisting too greatly the revolution happening in America. And apparently, they are already practicing, as we've been telling you, and rehearsing for a cyber attack to bring down the economy. Now, we warned you about Archbishop Vigano's video that we've played, where he was saying, look, they have already planned and prepared a cyber attack to bring down the global economy. Well, we also know that he's right in that the World Economic Forum practiced a whole symposium on a cyber attack that brings down the economy. Now we know and found out this morning in some of my research that the Carnegie Foundation has planned and done a whole report and video on cyber attack that brings down the economy. So folks, they are definitely telegraphing, as they did with COVID lockstep in 2010, the Rockefeller document, or Event 201 in October of 2019 that included the CIA. They seem to telegraph what they're going to do. I don't know why, other than maybe they know the average American doesn't pay attention to this stuff. You know that, right? The average American does not pay attention to this stuff. So they're telegraphing likely to big government, big business, and they're just telegraphing the narrative and how it's going to go down, because they know that most Americans are absolutely brainwashed. They are sitting around watching Bachelor, Bachelorette, Dancing with the Stars. They're completely, they're binge-watching, you know, television shows on subscription channels. They're completely oblivious. So they could talk about this stuff in the open, and not enough people will know what's happening for it to even matter. And so I think part of it is they're telegraphing to each other and to other players, making sure the word's out, this is what's coming. I can't figure out why else they like to telegraph it. Joining me now to discuss this and a lot more is Patrick Wood of Technocracy.news. Patrick, welcome to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Brannon. Thank you.
So why do you think they telegraph this stuff?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. You pick up a news release and you see a story, the same news release appear in 100 different places. You realize that there's something like propaganda going on here, where the same story released and then boom, it appears everywhere without any other supporting information. This is what's happened with this latest simulation exercise that took place in Israel just a few days ago. And it was Reuters that released the first and only press release on December 9th. It's the only one I got, the source document, the only one I can find from this meeting, and it was very carefully written, in my opinion. The author is listed, of course, but maybe somebody else wrote it, maybe in collaboration, who knows. But the details in it were just enough to make you curious, to wonder, okay, there's some research we need to do here. You know, let's go find it. Well, I went to try to go find it. Maybe you had better luck than I did, but I haven't been able to find much of anything that's referenced in this article, other than the fact that we do know, yes, the meeting did take place. It wasn't Israel, originally scheduled for the UAE, but they changed it at the last minute. The point person for this conference, for the simulation, was an Israeli lady who is the leader of the Israeli cyber security task force, and all the usual players were there: the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, several countries from Europe, United States participated as well. And yes, the theme again was identical virtually to what the World Economic Forum did earlier this year, called Cyber Polygon. This was expanded because this was an actual simulation, not just a discussion. And this kind of reminds us of Event 201, which was actually a simulation, a scripted simulation of what a pandemic would look like in the world and how the nations would respond to it. So this is a little bit different than what Cyber Polygon was in that sense. This was an actual simulation where people played roles. They had a movie, apparently, that was that kind of narrated the whole scenario to them step by step. And then they collaborated and talked about what they would do, and they, you know, pushed fake buttons and pulled fake levers and that sort of thing. It's very interesting, I have to say.
Yeah, it absolutely is, Patrick. Let's read the article together here. We'll put it on the screen. Again, it's entitled, and this is from Reuters. You'll see right there, Stephen Scheer from Reuters has written this December 9th. Exclusive, International Monetary Fund, 10 countries simulate cyber attack on global financial system. By the way, don't forget, in my research, I have found that I think the third or fourth largest holder of precious metals, according to some of the reports I'm reading, is now the International Monetary Fund. We'll get into that in a minute. December 9th, Reuters, Israel on Thursday led a 10-country simulation of a major cyber attack on the global financial system in an attempt to increase cooperation that could help to minimize any potential damage to financial markets and banks. The simulated cyber attack evolved over 10 days, with sensitive data emerging on the dark web, along with fake news reports that ultimately caused chaos in global markets and a run on banks. So they're setting up the scenario, and they're saying, okay, something comes off the dark web, you've got fake news reports and basically conspiracy theories, and now you have runs on the bank. The simulation featured several types of attacks that impacted global foreign exchange and bond markets, liquidity, integrity of data, and transactions between importers and exporters. Quote, these events are creating havoc in the financial market, end quote, said a narrator of a film shown to the participants as part of the simulation as seen by Reuters. Now, I'm trying to find that video. Patrick's trying to find that video. If any of you find it, please send it to me or Patrick. Just email it to me, Brannon@worldviewweekend.com. Brannon, B-R-A-N-N-O-N, Brannon, no D in there. Brannon@worldviewweekend.com. You'll live with two W's in a row, and you spell WORLDVIEWWEEKEND.com. If you guys find it, send it to me. We'd love to see it. Because we haven't been able to find this video as of yet, have we, Patrick?
We have not. And I do expect at some point it's going to get out. I don't think there's going to be a whistleblower. Somebody's going to release this video, or at least parts of it, and I think we'll see it eventually. But right now, what's interesting to me is the story's been around for a little while this month. But this is the only information that's been released on it, and there have not been any follow-up stories. There have been no press releases by any of the participants, which is extremely unusual, in my opinion. Every time I've done research in the past, one of the first things I do is I go and look for press releases that came out of these organizations. Usually they're innocuous and they're kind of generally worded, but you often can pick up clues in those press releases that takes you to some other place and you can find out information. In this case, this event took place, and for all of these mucky-muck people that went to that simulation, there have been no follow-up press releases that I can find whatsoever that reference to it. And I've done, probably 20 or 30 searches in different search engines, even today, to try and locate a press release. I haven't found any.
Okay, and we're going to go back here real quick. This is amazing what's coming to us here. All right, it's all starting to connect together. Let me get back over to the screenshot. We'll keep reading. I had to pull up a PowerPoint because I'm going to show you guys some graphics. Okay, the article goes on to say that participants in the initiative called Collective Strength. Now, isn't that interesting? Collective, you know, this is collectivism is what this is. It's socialism. But they're going to call it Collective Strength. Included Treasury officials from Israel, the United States, the UK, United Arab Emirates, Austria, Switzerland, Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, and Thailand. Now, let's just stop and talk about those countries for a minute. We know the United States is largely run by the Federal Reserve, right? Austria, they're acting like a bunch of Nazis right now. Germany, they're not too far behind in acting like Nazis. You know, I'm not sure I trust a lot of these countries right here. How about you anymore, Patrick?
Well, actually, I don't trust any of them. And, you know, it's no surprise the United States and the UK would be involved in it. But the governments of both of those nations, of course, are completely tipped over into the Great Reset mentality. The UAE has said multiple times that it wants to be the leader in fintech in the world. Austria, as you said, is going into full-blown, I don't know what you'd call it at this point, just tyranny, absolute authoritarian tyranny. Germany has a new prime minister that replaced Merkel, and this new prime minister was a former member of the Trilateral Commission. That's interesting to me.
Whoa, say that again? Say that?
Pardon?
What was that last thing you just said?
Germany?
Yeah.
The Trilateral Commission?
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot of influence from the...
What were you saying about the Trilateral Commission?
The new prime minister of Germany that replaced Angela Merkel, or, well, elected, I should say, didn't replace, but he was elected in Germany.
And he used to be a part of the Trilateral Commission.
Exactly.
And people think that's a conspiracy group if you talk about it, but it's not. It is a real group. Barry Goldwater used to warn about them, didn't he? Who Ronald Reagan backed.
Oh, absolutely he did. And he got it right. In fact, he was the only elected representative that I ever saw putting something in writing that actually identified the Trilateral Commission and what its goals and motives were. And he was exactly right. we wrote about it not from making up stories ourselves, but we simply went and got their original documents and reported on those. We quoted them and reported on them, and people... Well, not people, but the Trilateral Commission called us conspiracy theorists. You know, we're just smoking peyote or something out in Arizona.
But you were called in. Do I remember the story? You were called in by Goldwater's someone from his staff?
Well, I was. It was pretty funny. I was sitting in my office one day. We had a very casual office in Scottsdale, and this guy comes in a pinstripe suit, spit-shine shoes. I mean, guy looks really sharp, right? And I thought for sure it was the FBI or the CIA, and they were going to probably, you know, pull out a Tommy gun and kill us all. I mean, I was just scared out of my wits. And he stops in, and he sits and stands in front of my desk, and he now says, yeah, well, I'm chief of staff for Senator Goldwater, and he wants to know if what he's going to just about to write in his book is true. And so he interviewed us on the Trilateral Commission of what we'd found. I showed him a bunch of the original documents we had in our library at that point. And anyway, he left, and I got a good chuckle out of it, I guess, over the years that how scared I was. I still remember that to this day.
Do you still have a lot of that original research?
Oh, absolutely. My bookcases and my file cabinet is full of it.
We need to do a whole show just on that some night. But when we come back, I want to tell you who else is involved in this simulation that Reuters is reporting on. Don't go away. Welcome back. Glad you're with us. Worldview Radio, our website, worldviewradio.com. This Reuters article from December 9th goes on to report all the countries that are involved, but then it says, as well as representatives from the International Monetary Fund, World Bank, and Bank of International Settlements. Well, let's just stop right there and talk about the International Monetary Fund for a minute. The International Monetary Fund was started in part by John Maynard Keynes, of which we get Keynesian economics, who, of course, helped to keep the Depression going longer by stating that when there's an economic slowdown, the government becomes the primary spender, and that's what kept the Depression going longer. Of course, John Maynard Keynes, Keynesian economics, is the one who said, by a continuous process of inflation, we can steal the vast majority of the people's wealth, and not one man in a million will know what we're doing. Now, he helped to start the International Monetary Fund. The IMF, since 1969, has had something known as SDRs, Special Drawing Rights. It's a collection of currencies, basket of currencies, if you will, and it is the beginning of a global currency that's there, and some believe that they, the IMF, will be the ones who initially will bring us a global currency in conjunction with the World Bank and the United Nations and these other players that work in concert together. Well, isn't it interesting that the International Monetary Fund, again, is pushing along with others for a digital currency? And they have, according to numerous reports, they have such a large amount of gold to be the third or fourth largest of gold holders in the world. Do you want to comment on this, Patrick?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the IMF and SDRs in particular. Anthony Sutton and I wrote rather extensively about SDRs back in the early 1980s, and it was on the books back then, same idea, concept that is out there today. And there was even talk back then about including gold into that basket of currencies for the sake of creating a valuation that could be kind of standardized across the whole planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's never happened yet, but Sutton wrote a book called The War on Gold back then, noting that the World Bank and the other gold bullion banks, as well as the IMF, were coordinating to suppress the price of gold. And this has pretty much been repeated ever since, you know, from people in that industry, that there's been suppression of the price of gold. But in the process of suppression, yes, you're right, the IMF now has come out to be one of the biggest gold holders in the world. And this is by an organization who said gold was useless, gold is outdated, gold is outmoded, gold is last century, it will never be anything in the future, it'll have no use whatsoever. And yet, while they're saying that on one hand, on the left hand, the right hand has been out executing buy orders in the market that is suppressing in order to accumulate more gold. This
yep.
sounds a little fishy to me.
Absolutely it does. And I think they've got a racket going on known as naked shorts, as I'm told, that involves buying this stuff up on paper and then dumping it on the market to press the price down. Then they rush in and buy up the physical. Have you heard about this game being played?
Well, I have. And, you know, there's lots of been lots of contradictions over the years that never, you know, quite balanced out correctly. But you know, the idea of shorting to suppress a market is very real, because you can drive the price down, but when you turn around and have to cover those shorts, it tends to drive the price back up. So one has to be very, very shrewd to use investment techniques like that to come out as a net holder of the commodity, in this case gold. So they have accumulated this gold over a period of time by manipulating the market in certain ways that allows them to suppress the price and then buy back enough plus more to fill up their coffers as well. So obviously this has been successful though, Brandon. That's my point, really. It's been very successful over the years. They have emerged as one of the largest gold owners in the world, and you know, everybody else that owns gold, consumers and maybe companies and stuff around the world, they have been pretty much hosed over a period of time by this market manipulation.
Yep. But this tells us, though, that there, when you have Iran, China, Russia, the IMF, all these groups, Germany, loading up their central vaults with gold, that tells you they know what's coming, and they know that gold probably will play a role. Now, this radio audience knows that I years ago said I believe they will also have to back the currency with a hard asset like land. And now we hear that there's even going to be a financial program on Wall Street that you and I reported on last week, where they actually do that. They use eminent domain and other things to grab up land and then have a whole investment based on land and hard asset of land.
That's right. And that has been a program that's been accumulating over the years, where land is being aggregated into strong hands, international hands, including the likes of, the United Nations, for instance, with so-called heritage zones, and as well as big NGOs like Nature Conservancy and others. They have been accumulating resources around the world like crazy. It's not something that just started last month, in other words. It's
right.
Been going on for a period of time.
But look how they're all moving toward hard assets, gold, silver, land. They all realize the fiat currencies are toast, and it makes you wonder what they're going to back everything with. But while they also get a hold of the land, that also puts them then at the center of being the central controllers of food production and everything else. We continue reading from the Reuters report. So you not only have the International Monetary Fund, but you have the World Bank, and then the Bank for International Settlements, if you guys want to show that on the screen, the article from Reuters, openly telling you who's involved. International Monetary Fund, World Bank, and the Bank for International Settlements. Now, I've been doing television and radio for several years on the Bank for International Settlements, and I was writing and saying that you could watch for the global governance to largely come out of the Bank for International Settlements. How did I know that? Because Carol Quigley, who wrote the book Tragedy and Hope, said it in his book, and he had been allowed to see some of the papers of these globalist groups, and he thought globalism was a great idea, and he wrote a book, Tragedy and Hope, and spilled his guts, and that the Bank for International Settlements would be at the center. Well, in 2010, I did a TV show talking about this, and then April 26, 2010, after I did the TV show, talking about the BIS, the Bank for International Settlements, being at the center for global governance, who comes to give a speech? The president of the European Central Bank, April 26, 2010, comes to America, gives a speech in New York, and what's he say? The Bank for International Settlements is going to be at the center of global governance. So isn't it interesting? These are the people involved in this. And I've been doing this series on Sunday nights, Patrick, called The Great Collapse as Necessary for the Great Reset. I finished up part 9 this past Sunday night. Let me go to this screen for those watching on television. Here is the interactive wheel of the Economic Forum, the World Economic Forum, their interactive wheel. Notice what's at the center, digital economy and new value creation. Then from there, it splinters out to digital infrastructure for all. And then from there, it structures out to what? Digital identity. So you're going to a full digital economy. Well, here's an article, August 13th, 2020, from Forbes magazine. Federal Reserve reveals research plans for digital dollar. Who, folks? The Federal Reserve, this group of private banks given private charter back in 1913. Here's Barron's. Neil Richardson says, expect the Federal Reserve to launch a digital currency. The biggest surprise that could happen next year, the Federal Reserve launches a digital currency in 2021. Well, they didn't do that, but we do know it was in the law for the emergency coronavirus bill and pulled out. A digital currency would have made it easier for the feds to get direct payments to households. That's how they'll use it. Here's a headline. This is, I think, Fox News. Fed Chair Powell hints on digital dollar. Powell said the central bank is working hard on the report. This is July 14th, 2021. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell said the central bank was advancing research and public outreach regarding its own digital dollar, and a white paper could be released this fall. Well, here's a picture for those watching by television of the Bank for International Settlements. And I've always noticed it looks like a boot, and it will be a boot on the throat, I believe, of the world. Well, here is an article from the S&P Global Market Intelligence. The Bank for International Settlements, this is September 2021, so this year, this fall. Bank for International Settlements to test international settlements for digital currencies with central banks. The BIS Innovation Hub, along with Federal Banks of Australia, Monetary Authority of Singapore, the Bank Negara, Malaysia, and South African Reserve Bank, aims to develop prototype shared platforms for cross-border transactions using multiple central bank digital currencies, or CBDCs, the group of global regulators said in a September 2nd press release. Well, here's another headline. This one also, Reuters, July 9th, 2021. Bank for International Settlements, International Monetary Fund call for global cooperation on a digital central bank currencies. Well, isn't that interesting, Patrick? The Bank for International Settlements, according to this July 9, 2021 article by Reuters, is calling for cooperation on a central bank. Well, now we have, in this latest Reuters article, the Bank for International Settlements and the International Monetary Fund warning us about a cyber attack and collapse of the economy. Huh. Sounds like they're positioning themselves well to be in the driver's seat.
Well, they are. And I, back when Sutton and I were writing about the Trilateral Commission in the early 1980s, late 70s, we realized there had been a mind shift, a global sea change, if you will, on the concept of globalization. And no, it didn't have as much to do with accumulating money as it did resources. We viewed it, I think, accurately back then that what the Trilateral Commission, remember that David Rockefeller was a co-founder of the Trilateral Commission, the money guy, chairman of Chase Bank back then. The idea was, I think, in Rockefeller's mind, he had the idea that currency was going, current currency, the way they knew it back then, was going to all be burned up in the end, and that the only safety valve would be owning all the resources. So they set about owning resources instead of just owning money. Well, in the end of it, what we see today, as resources are being accumulated around the world, these central bankers are not just going to walk away and say, oh, well, our currency's burned up and we're out of business. Sorry, see you later. Not at all. They're still in control. They will continue to be in control. But this time, what's happening, we see it. I see signs of it, markers everywhere I look. The intent is to take the resources of the world that have been aggregated, accumulated, and financialize them. In other words, turn them into digital tokens that will be spent by the people of the world, where the resources owned by a few people will basically undergird all of the digital currency that is created as a result of those resources. And people will essentially have, they will own nothing except those digital resources. Blared out so dramatically in Klaus Schwab's statement, you will own nothing and be happy. That's the intent. You will own nothing. They will own everything, and they will issue the digital certificates against those resources. They'll monetize them. They'll financialize them. They'll tokenize them, whatever you want to call it. I've seen this 500 different times in the last 2 years. This is the direction it's headed right now, Brandon.
Absolutely it is. Absolutely it is. And again, if we study what's happening, you know, then you can compare. You can, or you can prepare. You can be ready for this, because when they go to this, everybody and their grandmother is going to be under their thumb that's in the system, because they're going to have to do a lockdown. They're going to have to do what James Rickards calls a ICE 9, lock everything down for, I don't know, several days, several weeks, a few months. I don't know. But they're going to have to lock everything down while they reset. Now, that's what James Rickards was saying a few years ago in his book, Currency Wars, and then another one after that, I can't remember the name of it, but where he wrote about the ICE 9. But that book's a few years old now. They may not have to lock down for 3 or 4 months because they've been preparing so much along the way. They may be ready to roll this thing out pretty quick. But there will be a period of time, I think, Patrick, where everybody is locked down while they reset the new system. We'll be right back. back. Glad you're with us. Worldview Radio, website worldviewradio.com. A little hesitation there as I wait for the network, radio network, to join me with television. But this is a great opportunity to mention to the television audience, if you don't have a good Christian radio station in your market, can I highly recommend VCY America? You can go to their website, vcyamerica.org, vcyamerica.org, and find out all about them. Great Christian radio network, great music, Bible teaching, news, information, and it's great to work with, thank you, babe, some fresh hot coffee. It's great to work with VCO America, Lindell TV, Frank Speech, and I want you all to know Frank Speech and Lindell TV as well about Swiss, about VCY America. All right, so joining me is Patrick Wood, his website, technocracy.news, technocracy.news. Let's go back to the screen real quick and take a look at this. Here's the headline again, Reuters, July 9th, 2021. Bank for International Settlements, International Monetary Fund, call for global cooperation on digital central bank currencies. Now, let's read the article. London, July 9th, Reuters. The Bank for International Settlements, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank made a joint call on Friday for global cooperation on central bank digital currencies. And again, this is exactly what Carol Quigley predicted in his 1966 book, Tragedy and Hope, and the BIS would be at the center of it. The apex of the system was to be the Bank for International Settlements. And that's what we see happening. That's exactly what we see happening. And this was, again, warned about in 1930. The New York Times reported on it, quoting a Representative Lewis McFadden, chairman of the Banking Committee in the House, saying the Federal Reserve of New York is eager to enter into a close relationship with the Bank for International Settlements. The conclusion is impossible to escape that the state and treasury departments are willing to pool the banking systems of Europe and America, setting up a world financial power independent of and above the government of the United States. The United States, under present conditions, will be transformed from the most active of manufacturing nations into a consuming and importing nation with a balance of trade against it. Well, that was 1930, Patrick Wood.
Yes, it was. And the Bank for International Settlements has remained the top financial dominant factor in the world, even to this very day. They're absolutely in control of the global financial system. They are the head... the head influence of all the central banks around the world. I wouldn't say it's quite like a puppet on a string, but darn close. And what's really interesting about the BIS, and this has always been this way, they have a surround of silence that is like none other in the world. All of their members travel without portfolio. That means they can't be stopped by anybody anywhere. And inspected as to what they're carrying, for instance, you know, in their briefcases and stuff, private papers and stuff like that. They can't be arrested. They have complete diplomatic immunity everywhere on the planet, and it's enforced.
And they're bankers. These are bankers. These aren't UN diplomats. Yes. These are bankers.
Yes. It was just amazing. So they're not accountable to anyone. If anything, these people who work for the BIS are the consummate examples of unelected and unaccountable technocrats,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Look at this screenshot, because, again, I think it was March of 2010. I was doing a TV show on this, and then I think it was the next month, but it was within a few weeks of my writing and speaking on TV about those quotes I just gave you about the BIS. And I said, look, watch the BIS if you want to understand where we're going with globalism. Well, within a few weeks, boom. Here we see European Central Bank, keynote address by the president of the European Central Bank, April 26, 2010, and he went on to say in his speech, under one heading, the evolution of global governance, was one of the sub-headlines of his speech. Let me turn to the question of how global governance is evolving after the crisis. Overall, the system is moving toward decisively genuine global governance that is much more inclusive, encompassing the key emerging economies as well as industrialized countries. The significant transformation of global governance is that we are engineering. Listen now, that we are engineering today is illustrated by three examples, and he goes on to give them. But listen to what he says. The significant transformation of global governance that we are engineering. This is the president of the European Central Bank, and he's talking about the Bank for International Settlements. Patrick?
That's right. Couldn't be more clear. And, of course, the BIS is right there located in the center of all activity in Europe. They're in Basel, Switzerland. and easy access to everything. People come to them. They don't have to go to the people or to the other entities. But it's very clear. There's no conspiracy here. This is one major point people ought to see. This is not a conspiracy on our part. It's a conspiracy on their part. But there's enough in the wide open view right now to say, yep, there it is. You know, we can read it from their own lips.
Listen to what else he goes on to say in that speech. Here's a screenshot. The general economy meeting, this is what meetings held regularly at the Bank for National Settlements, the President of the European Bank in 2010 said, the general economy meeting in which all systemic emerging economies, systemic emerging economies, central bank governors are fully participating, has become the prime group for global governance among central bankers. What's the prime group? The global economy meeting. They're held regularly at the Bank for International Settlements. This is what he's talking about in Basel, Switzerland, their headquarters. The global economy meeting, which gathers at the BIS headquarters in Basel. So they've told us what they're going to do, how they're doing it. Now we're starting to see it unfold right there in the newspapers today.
Yes.
How many Americans understand what you and I are talking about right now?
Oh, probably about 0.1%. I hate to say, I'm cynical. I'm a little cynical. But we've been talking about this, you know, for a very, well, Sutton passed now, but we were talking about this in the late 1970s, and people looked at us like we're absolutely insane. But, you know, this is the way it is, and I guess maybe more people now understand than did before, but still most people have their head buried in the sand. They just don't see this at all.
No.
And honestly, economics is really boring to most people. They don't want to talk about economics. That's not exciting. You know, let's get a big political fight going.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't worry about the details. Don't worry about the economic side. But the whole point of technocracy from day one was to throw out the political system altogether. That's what they said back in the early 30s. They would throw out the entire political system, no people representation whatsoever, and they would simply take over a dictatorial role where they would use their so-called scientific method to run everything in society. All of economic activity, they believe, was the way to control society. And they viewed people as mere resources in that society, not the transcendent being or whatever in the economy or the exceptional being, but just as resources, just like coal and oil, whatever. People were no better than any of those other things, and they believed that they could just run the whole enchilada as an economic system that would not require any political representation whatsoever. This is the mentality we see today with the Great Reset that we've been talking about. Same thing.
My guest is Patrick Wood, technocracy.news. Technocracy.news is his website. 1-800-347-9829. Your thoughts, your comments, your questions. 1-800-347-9829. Let's go to a video. Look at this screenshot here, guys, for those watching my television. Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. In 2019, Carnegie's Cyber Policy Initiative launched a project to develop an international strategy for cybersecurity and global financial system. So again, they're concerned, the Carnegie's, notice how the globalists are all of a sudden so concerned about economy and cyber attack and global financial crash. Watch and listen to the little video they put out. See if it'll play here.
The global financial system is going through a major digital transformation. Cash and credit cards are being traded in for phones. Banks are becoming tech companies, and tech companies are becoming banks. The coronavirus pandemic is accelerating this transformation, as people, businesses, even governments increasingly rely on financial services online. But growing reliance on digital infrastructure increases the risk from cyber attacks.
Cyber is a huge issue, okay? It's a national security issue. I think banks are very good in protection, defense companies. I think there are a lot of undefended things out there.
The financial system's heavy and increasing reliance on technology increases the risk that significant cybersecurity incidents could disrupt the financial sector.
Therefore, the responsible bank of the 21st century must be at the cutting edge of technology to survive.
Cyber criminals are becoming more daring, and now nation states have joined the fray. North Korea has stolen $2 billion from at least 38 countries over the last 5 years alone.
New information tonight that Kim Jong-un's army of hackers is brazenly attacking banks around the world.
Attacks are growing more disruptive and destructive. Imagine the consequences of a cyber attack that wipes or alters financial records, especially as the economy remains fragile in the wake of the pandemic.
Cyber attacks hit the Stock Exchange of New Zealand 4 days straight this week, leading to disruptions across its operations.
International cooperation is necessary, but it remains unclear who is responsible for protecting the global financial system against cyber attacks. That is why the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, in collaboration with the World Economic Forum, has developed a blueprint for an international strategy to better protect the financial system against cyber threats. This blueprint is based on 6 priorities. The global financial system must be made more resilient against cyber threats. The international community must strengthen norms, clarify what is unacceptable behavior in cyberspace targeting the financial sector, and when malicious activity has crossed the line. Governments and industry need to respond collectively.
All right, so we're going to stop it right there. But notice who they're doing this with. They're doing this with the World Economic Forum, Patrick Wood.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's exactly right. Back in the 70s and 80s, the Trilateral Commission members hid out like scared bunnies in their little, you know, caves that people like us would criticize them. They finally got really, really put out with that, and they just hid out. Today, these same type of people in the World Economic Forum, they're not only not hiding in their little holes anymore, they are right out in front of the whole world, laying out their entire program for everybody to see. The problem is, I guess not many people are really paying attention, but they're not hiding anymore. That's my point.
So
they're openly declaring what they're doing now.
And let's say we have and this thing can melt down fast. We know how fast it can melt down. We have the clip from 2008 where the Representative Paul Kanjorski, Logan, if you want to show the screen, we may have time to play the clip here in a minute again, but this is Representative Paul Kanjorski on C-SPAN back in 2008. He was the Capital Markets Subcommittee Chair. He talked about how fast the whole global system was melting down back in 2008, and they had to put the brakes on, and the whole thing would have collapsed globally, you know, within hours. So let's say this thing starts and they lock everything down and start locking you out. And by the way, they will have to lock you out of everything. They'll have to lock you out of your mutual fund. They'll have to lock you out of your checking, banking, everything. Because if they don't lock you out of everything, whatever they leave open, everybody will run to that, right? So people will figure out what's locked, what's not locked, and there's something that's unlocked where they can go and start getting funds. They'll run to it. So they'll have to lock, I think, everything down across the board and as they reset. Once they've reset, what do you think? A haircut of your savings account by 30, 40%? What do you think, Patrick?
Honestly, when it comes to that, it's going to be everything is gone, and you'll simply get a replacement digital currency. And they'll say, thank you very much. This is all you get. You'll have to deal with it. So in traditional terms, you're not going to have anything left. They will just simply declare game over. Financial institutions are gone. The stock market equity share and so on is gone. And you'll just have to take what they decide to give you based on, you know, whatever you had before. I wouldn't call it a haircut. I'd call it an out-and-out replacement of what you had before.
And remember, you're the on in the small print of your bank, it's not your money. We'll be right back with your calls. welcome back. Glad you're with us. Worldview Radio, website worldviewradio.com. All right, let's go to Robert, line one. Robert in England. Robert, thanks for calling in today, Robert.
Hi, Brannon.
Hi.
When, just a few minutes ago, the phrase people as economic units was mentioned, what immediately lit up, you know these links in the chain, but I think the listeners might need reminding. Peter Drucker, Rick Warren, feeds it into the church.
Yep. Peter Drucker, Rick Warren have fed all of this. He's quoting Fabian Socialist in his book, The Purpose-Driven Life. And again, we tried warning people, but when we did, we were divisive. We were being used by the devil. Because again, I was talking today to a former high-ranking FBI agent who used to work on the seventh floor and brief the FBI director. And he was saying the American people are, other than, of course, this audience and a few others, the American people are just oblivious. They don't know. They don't have context. They don't have history. They're so easily deceived. They're so gullible. And it's because of our educational system. And that includes people in the church. You try to warn them, and then, of course, they attack you. And then 10 years later, they realize you were right. But, hey, that's 10 years they've just had to destroy your entire church and church denominations. And instead of getting ready, they just continue to build and build and build and go into more and more and more and more debt.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm the theological students joke about eschatology. It's the last thing you want to study. But that's what Rick Warren says.
Yeah. Rick Warren said when it comes to studying Bible prophecy, God says it's none of your business. Yeah, that's interesting because the Bible specifically says there's a special blessing for those who seek to understand the book of Revelation. But Rick Warren says when it comes to Bible prophecy, that's God says it's none of your business. Well, and that's, of course, we're talking about Rick Warren, who Time Magazine reported was part of the SDS, Students for Democratic Society, and was marching around some government building. And I can find nowhere where he ever denounced the SDS. So my point is he's probably a Trojan horse and has been from the beginning.
Yeah, so exactly. And this is why the church is so deceived on a lot of these things. And you've got so many people in the churches these days that just don't understand the things that you're warning about.
Yep. And that's why a lot of these people don't go to church anymore. They don't go to a physical building anymore. Many of them increasingly are going online. And if you have a good church in your area with a good New Testament fellowship, the Bible says not to forsake the assembling of yourselves together. So I hope you have that. But many people don't have that. It's not an option. They can't find it. And what they're doing is they're finding people like Dr. Andy Woods, and they're literally saying, can I join your church? Can I watch every Sunday? I consider you my pastor. Can I, you know, join your church? I'll sign the doctoral statement. Churches are melting down because many people are figuring this out.
And the other thing, Brandon, if I can just say, I'm in a relatively small church, and there are things that we cannot do for lack of people. And if people only came in and joined the church instead of looking and saying, oh, you're not doing what we want, and going elsewhere, you know, I mean, that's another aspect of the church situation. But I mustn't take up any more time. Let somebody else get in the call.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Robert. Brandon. Bye.
Let's go to Diana, line two. Diana, thanks for calling in today. Go ahead, Diana.
Hi. Yeah, in much the same way they drove the price of gold down and then went and bought it all up, it's what's happening when they're saying the Arctic's going to melt down and all the East Coast and West Coast are going to fall into the ocean and water levels are going to rise and the land will be useless, so driving the price of the land down, then they're buying up all the land.
Yeah, great call. Thank you, Diane. Carrie, okay. Carrie, line four. Carrie, thank you for calling in, Carrie.
Hi, you're hard to get a hold of. Hey, I just want to make a comment to the speaker that I do believe that the majority of Christians do have the discernment to understand that this crash is coming. And a quick comment, I really believe that they're training these migrants that are coming in for their international police force to help with this whole crash. I was at Walmart in Richland Center, Wisconsin, and saw five vanfuls full of Mexican people with Middle Eastern drivers. I had walked out in the parking lot because a lady was missing her little boy, and they literally were all standing there looking at us, and she said to the police force, well, the people here in the parking lot look a little suspicious, and that's when my eyeballs opened up, and thinking that they took the little boy, he had just ran back into the Walmart. They didn't do anything wrong, but they all had New York license plates. So I really, truly believe that they are taking a lot of these migrant, they were all migrant men, no women, no children, and training them for the international police force that they're going to use on us.
Well, let me ask Patrick. Patrick, what do you think about the agreements we have between our country and the United Nations when it comes to policing under a massive crisis?
Well, I think that those agreements are there. We've had some references to them in the past. I remember a few years ago there was a Strong Cities Network that came out and talked about cooperation of police and policing forces across national boundaries. And we do know there have been actual sightings and recordings of U.N. troops on American soil training with American troops. It's not out of sorts at all. And, you know, when it comes right down to it, it's a common thing all throughout the world for the United Nations to throw troops into a nation when there's some disaster takes place or whatever. There's always some excuse to get them in there. It's just a matter of time before that happens in America.
Well, when
I can't see at this point any impediment to that.
When the major players are all tied back to the UN, I mean, then you left us. Yeah, thank you, Kerry. Let's go to Leslie from Duluth, Minnesota. Leslie, line 3. Thanks for calling in, Leslie. Hi, Leslie.
Hi.
How are you? Thank you for calling in.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Way back in the 70s, I'm a teacher, and way back in the 70s, I found a book by Jerry Allen called None Dare Call It Conspiracy.
Yep.
1971. And he just laid it all on the line, and he piqued my curiosity, so I continued reading. Your books are wonderful, by the way.
Thank you. Thank
you. Cradle to College in 93 and on and on.
Thank you.
There was a question I had about Daddy Bush. We call him Daddy Bush. There was something in his eyes that bothered me, and I just did not trust him throughout his presidency and throughout his whole life. I knew he was a Skull and Bones.
Yep.
And his control, and Skull and Bones is controlled through blackmail and extortion and all those kinds of things.
Well, Leslie, good news. I have a book that arrived today on the Bush crime family by Roger Stone. It arrived today. I'll be reading it. I'm going to be interviewing Roger on it. It'll blow your mind. So we're going to be getting to that. We'll be getting to that. Thank you, Leslie. Merry Christmas. Real quick, you hear the music playing. What is Jack Dorsey doing, Patrick?
Well, Jack Dorsey has left Twitter, active management Twitter, and he's now throwing himself into the Bitcoin blockchain world to try and transform the world into a digital entity and away from, you know, what we know. This is probably one of the most disturbing headlines I saw.
Absolutely. Patrick Wood, Technocracy.news. Thanks for listening, folks. Take care.
This has been Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House. CDs are available by calling 1-800-729-9829. Or to hear an MP3 file of this or earlier programs, go to worldviewweekend.com. Views expressed may or may not be those of Worldview Weekend, BCY America, or this station. This program is a public affairs presentation of worldviewweekend.com and is heard weekdays on VCY America.